Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 262. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Ira Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find me at the Friars Club, March 11th. Get your tickets now. The link for tickets is in this episode description of this podcast, turnersparks.com. I'm recording my new hour of comedy at the Friars Club. Kaplan will be there. Patreon subscribers will be there. We have a table for the Patreon subscribers and the listeners. Patreon, we got Will Prechuk, Dom Mills, Drew Fralick, Joe Ellis. My wife, Yay, is going to be there. I think she's a Patreon subscriber.
It's, very, course, it's a Kaplan. VIP table. Very important Patreons. That's the
it's
table.
It's a VIP table. Get your tickets now. They're selling quickly. That's you and Kaplan. You can find Kaplan at the Friars Club March 11th for my show.
I'll be signing and autographs
on all social media platforms as Cap in America, K-A-P, Cap in America. Kaplan on the podcast today. We're so excited. We're talking about Afghanistan. We have a guest, Shafiq Ghari, who is in Afghanistan, and we will get to him in a minute. There's so much to talk about. What is Afghanistan doing now? It left our news 6 months ago. It was 1 month of the evacuation and everybody was so sad. And then like Americans do, everyone moved on. Guess what? Afghanistan's still there.
It's still an issue, we've heard. It's not because it went away from the media completely. I thought we solved the problem. Everything was, they lived happily ever after.
And solved the problem. I think we created the problem in September. Yeah.
Okay.
So we didn't solve anything.
I thought that's what we did.
We just left and we're like, someone else deal with it. So anyway, he's there now trying to deal with it. We will get to him in a minute. But Kaplan, the way to support this show is to come March 11th to my album recording. But if you're not in New York, if you cannot make it, we do three times a week. We do a Patreon show called Live from the Bunker. It's me. It's you. It's our Full Throttle comedy podcast. For $5 a month, you get that show. For $10 a month, you get your own. We went to number one in Armenia.
Number one, baby.
We just talked to Shafiq off air, and he said he wants one of these mugs. And we said if we go to number one in Afghanistan, we will definitely be printing new merch.
We're number one in Turkey right now, so that might be a.
Thank you to our Turkish listeners. Yes. We are number one stand-up comedy podcast in Turkey. Pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. If you go to number one in Afghanistan. Anyway, currently we're number one in Armenia. We went to number one in Armenia. So we made mugs, we made shirts, we made hats, we made tote bags. You get a shirt or whatever iPhone you want. Covers. Just for $10 a month, sign up for a $10 subscription. You get that. And for $20 a month, you get your own advertisement right here on this show. That's pretty good.
We'll say whatever you want. You know, anything you want us to say, we'll say it. $20 a month. So,
yeah, exactly. Whatever side of any political issue you're on, we'll take your side for $20.
We're immediately on your side. Yes, we can be bought
for $20. Kaplan, now on to today's show.
Yes.
So
what are we talking about?
We have Shafiq. He's in Kabul.
Yeah.
What do you know about the situation, Kaplan, going on right now in Kabul?
Well, obviously, in all seriousness, I know we created a giant clusterfuck back in August when we left.
Yes.
And I knew at the time, I think we all said it, like, it's going to be in the media for like a week or two in America. And then we're just going to, it's going to like go away and we're going to stop thinking
about it. We called it back then. We said people will care for a couple of weeks and then Joe Biden will fall asleep at a press conference and everybody, that'll be the news.
And I went to research this episode. I went to my local Afghani restaurant, Long Island City, the other day. I had the great national dish of lamb and raisins and carrots. And there was a little jar there that said to support the children in Afghanistan. And I noticed it was like $2 in the jar. People have stopped paying attention. But not after today. We're gonna raise awareness. But I do know that there was money. It was billions of dollars, I believe, like $7 billion in reserves that we just decided to just sort of take the American government, Joe Biden. Let's back up a little bit.
If you don't mind, I'll jump in here. You're stumbling a little bit. So
I'm having some technical. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, from what I understand, Afghanistan, since we left and then foreign aid dried up. And now Joe Biden there's a $7 billion in Afghani reserves that are in the United States. Joe Biden's blocking a portion of that from going back we can get into why later. But the point is that it seems to us from what we can see is that society is pretty much crumbling in Afghanistan.
Yeah, they could use the money.
75% of the money of the country was supported by foreign aid. That 75% is not happening anymore. So their economy is now 25% of what it used to be. And it's trouble all over the place. But we have a man who's in Kabul right now, who's from Afghanistan, who is the managing director of Moby Group, which if you've not heard of Moby Group, they are a
media company,
a media conglomerate. Empire. In Afghanistan, the number one media conglomerate in Afghanistan.
Tolo
they own
TV.
Tolo TV. Yeah. The way I met Shafiq, our guest, is through trying to get someone out of Afghanistan 6 months ago, which we can get into as well. Shafiq Ghahari, welcome to the show. Thank you for doing this, sir.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you.
Thanks for being with us.
How do we know, from what we know, we're hearing that everything's crumbling over there and it's a mess and it's a disaster. How close to the reality is that?
Let me first come back to your sentence that we solved the problem. We didn't solve the problem. but the international community, especially Americans, joined us in a journey. In a bumpy journey from 2002 to 2001. And then we came all the way to 2021, 22, 21. And all of a sudden, they threw us back to 2001 and they left us. And we are back to 2001 now.
I apologize on behalf of our entire country.
It wasn't either of our decisions over here. We didn't
Well,
support.
Kaplan I thought know. We solved the problem, as he just said. So he's moved on.
Yeah, that is what... That's what I wanted to say about solving the problems.
What do you have to say for yourself, Kaplan?
Well, no, I apologize on behalf of the country. That's what we do here. We interview people every week and we talk about countries we screwed up and we apologize for our country. So sorry, we're gonna make some calls.
I apologize. Yeah, it happened.
Well, yeah. So you're right. We were there for 20 years. Let's get into you. I'm interested in this immediately. So Tolo TV, Moby Group is a company that owns Tolo TV. Tolo TV is the number one TV network in Afghanistan. And from what I read, this network started in 2004, and I assume you're the managing director of Mobi Group, so I would assume you're also high up in Tolo TV. And it started in 2004, which, if that lines up correctly, so the U.S.-backed government of Afghanistan has been in charge of the country the entire time Tolo TV has been running until 6 months ago. Is that correct?
Okay, Tolo TV is running, is still running.
Yes.
The Americans are not there, but Tolo TV and the other our other stations, Tolo News, Lemar, and our radio stations, they are running, they are functioning. But you are right. The Mobi Group started activity in Afghanistan back in 2002 by establishing the first private radio in Afghanistan. And 1 year, 2 years later, Tolo TV started operation and became one of the most popular and TV station in Afghanistan.
Before 2001, I believe TV wasn't even legal, right? It was illegal in Afghanistan before.
Before 2001, the picture was not allowed. Music was not allowed.
Music wasn't allowed.
Even taking picture was not allowed. And wow. But now the situation in these long term, that situation changed. And we had comedy shows, we had music shows, and we had soap operas and a very normal high standard TV station.
You had like a pop an American Pop Idol type of show, correct? Like
we had, but we were also very proud about our comedy show.
About your comedy show?
Yeah.
Yes.
We had very good comedy shows. We still have, luckily.
Yeah, so you had one of the comedians who became a star on Tolo TV was our mutual friend, C.R. Mateen, right?
Yeah.
And the way we met each other, so C.R. was a comedian in Afghanistan and had a comedy show called Shabaki. I'm trying to remember it. Shabaki Handa, right? And it was like a sketch comedy show, almost as out in America we would think of Chappelle's show, sketches and bits and stuff. And wildly popular. So in Afghanistan, just to put it into perspective, it went from a country that it was illegal to take a picture. And then all of a sudden they had television, they had comedy, they had drama, they had pop idol competitions. Yeah. How did that change the culture? How did you all help to change the culture of Afghanistan?
Yeah, one of the goals for establishing this station, I must also say that I was not from the very beginning with Mobi Group. I joined Mobi Group in 2012, but I accompanied the development of Mobi Group from the next door, because we were in the city, and the owner of the Mobi Group are a very good friend of mine. And at that time, we took the risk to start with liberal shows and so on. And we had, there were people against it. They were conservative against it, but we had to push back. And we managed to do so. It was not an easy journey. We experienced setbacks, but we didn't stop and we continued. And I'm more lucky now that we are still on air. Our screen is still providing pictures to the Afghans inside Afghanistan, outside Afghanistan. Our entertaining shows change a lot. But the fact that we are still functioning is a big success. And also that our female colleagues or on the screen, that's also very good for us.
Wow. So
yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, in 2002, when Mobi Group started, and then in 2004, when Tolo TV started, were women allowed to be on screen kind of immediately?
No. Okay. But it was not forbidden because after the fall of Taliban one in 2001, that we started with with our female colleagues. There were people who were against it, but we managed. But there are also a lot of other people who were supporting this initiative. And we managed to convince also the others, and our supporters became more strong or stronger, and that's why that we brought this change in the country, and it was well received.
Amazing. And then comedy started, and our Shabaki Kanda, Ciara Mateen's show was even going so far, from what I've read, as to doing, it was a political, they would do political comedy. So making fun of different groups and different political organizations. And even, I, from what I remember, the Taliban, correct?
No.
Oh, no. they never did that.
No, but we didn't produce shows, comedy shows about religious, about parties, about political groups, about individuals. To be honest, we had to be also careful how to deal with the situation. And we started, I think that the key to success was that these comedy shows started with teasing our colleagues or our good friends, so that the people could see it, that they could, that it's not something serious. It is just a comedy. And the people started to learn about it, and they become more open for it. At the end, we had comedy shows about the president, about the vice president, about powerful cabinet members. But they were also, they accepted these, and the people were also very happy about it.
So they had no tradition of comedy before that.
But Afghanistan had comedy before that. We didn't invade these. During all this war and terror and so on, people became more afraid, and we took a step by step approach, and pushed the barriers very carefully.
That's amazing, and it's real. Like, so in the United States, we do comedy, and you're allowed to do anything you want and say anything you want, mostly because people before us have paved the way. Like Lenny Bruce in the 1950s, 60s was getting arrested. He's an old American comedian. He was getting arrested for telling jokes, but he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And now today, because of him and other people like him, we can do whatever we want. And then people, American comedians, still think they're being dangerous by saying this or doing that. But truthfully, there's no danger. You can't go to jail in America.
We're First Amendment here. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't. No one's going to come attack you or anything for a joke. But what you all were doing was real risky.
And yeah, it was.
Did you
that's
all?
That's why I said.
Yep.
That's what I said, that we had to be careful. Because Afghanistan is a conservative society, and in these societies you have to respect certain rules, right. Especially the culture and so on. And you can't start all of a sudden to make comedy about very well respected personalities. It was not easy, but at the end of the day, people like it. And our comedians, even when the Taliban took the power 15th of August, one of our comedians were on the way to Mazar-e-Sharif to be evacuated from there. And on the road to there, they were stopped by Taliban soldiers. And many of them asked him to have a selfie with him. They asked him to do some jokes.
The Taliban has become into selfies. They've really jumped the shark.
This isn't your grandmother's Taliban.
Yeah, they used to not allow pictures. Now they're taking selfies with celebrities. I mean, posting an Instagram story.
Yeah, you can search in social media. Taliban are using all the social media platforms. There is also change in the mindset of these young people who spend also most of their lives in France and in rural areas of Afghanistan. I just wanted to give you an example that after these 20 years, we came to the point that even Taliban soldiers treated our comedians respectfully and they wanted to have pictures with them.
That's amazing. I mean,
which is good.
I guess
that is good. Yeah. That's something that you all did. I mean, I'm sure the media helped push that. But I did read there was a comedian, you might know this person, who was killed by the Taliban. Or was he a singer or a comedian around that September time?
It was a comedian who got killed just a few weeks before the fall of end of July 2001. It was a sad news. And we don't know the background about it, but the fact that he got killed was very sad.
Hmm.
And but that was also, on one side, we have this sad reality about the loss of these amazing comedian in Kandahar. But on the other side, we have also the news that some of the comedians, even Taliban soldiers wanted to have a picture with them.
Wow.
That are two totally different realities on the ground. One very sad, a very sad one, and the other a very not funny one, but normal one.
Yeah, I think. But this brings up a good point. I think so. I spent myself and Donnie, the owner of a comedy club, Stand Up New York in New York City. He and I worked with you and with some other people for a few months trying to help CR and his family, the Afghan comedian, get out of Afghanistan. We ended up not being, he did get out. It wasn't because of us. We tried and failed and tried and failed a bunch of different things, but he did get out and he got with his family, which is great. But we learned through that process, Donnie and I did, that this idea that the Taliban, at least at that time, was one block of people was kind of wrong. It seemed like it was, if you met this person, they would want to take a selfie with you in the Taliban. And if you met this other guy in the Taliban, he would want to kill you. And it seemed not as cohesive as they were presenting it to us in the West. It seemed more ad hoc, I guess, at that time. I don't know if that's an experience. I know you were in Uzbekistan during this entire time. Is that right?
No, I was in Europe. I was in Netherlands 15th of August.
Oh,
I wished I were in Kabul.
You were in Europe.
I was in Europe, yeah.
Ah, okay. So when we were talking, you were in Europe that whole time. For some reason, I thought Uzbekistan.
Yeah. That was a very unhappy and a very tough time especially for me and some of my colleagues who were outside Afghanistan, because we had to help our colleagues on the ground. And we had from the very beginning, we set as two priorities. One, we should help our colleagues who want to leave the country as far as we can. And on the other side, we wanted to not let our screens to be shut down, to become dark. And it was two priorities which were contradicting each other. And I am happy that we, to some certain extent, we achieved both goals. On the second one, to not let our screens to become dark, we reached the goal. But we didn't manage to help all our colleagues who wanted to get out. It was also not possible. It was. I wished the transition would happen differently, but after our former president left the country, the chaos started, and everybody were scared because the majority of young Afghans, the overwhelming majority of young Afghans, they haven't seen the Taliban at all. They just heard about the Taliban from 1996 until 2001. They had very scary stories in mind, these people, these young people. And that is what, why everybody wanted to leave the country, because everybody was scared. And that is why what happened in these bad, very sad pictures of falling, of young Afghans falling from the airplanes. Trying to catch the airplane and to leave. It was not, and I was outside Afghanistan, and I had, I watched these pictures from the distance, and I suffered. I really suffered, especially in the first 3 to 4 weeks after the fall of Kabul.
How many people did you help to get out of Afghanistan? About how many?
I don't want to say I helped to get them out of Afghanistan, because many people were involved. But from our team, around 125, 29 people left the country. And they were crème de la crème from our country. They were the most famous, the most courageous, the most the most talented journalists, camera people, anchors, presenters. They left Afghanistan, and and that is also one of the biggest loss of the country, that 10,000 or 100,000 of highly educated people left Afghanistan in this brain drain. Afghanistan will suffer under it for the next 20 years, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And 100,000 people left? Is that what you said?
Sorry?
You said 100,000 people left the country? Is it?
No.
Yeah, but we don't have the exact number, but around 100,000.
So, Gavin, he said he helped. His company helped 100. He I know, but I meant 25 employees who got.
No, I just meant total. That's just, I didn't realize.
Hey, Tulu, from Tulu, from Tulu, 100, between 130, 120 people left the country.
Did you guys have to rehire like all those people? Have you been able to fill the?
We recruited new people. Yeah. For example, in our news channel, almost everyone left, and we had to recruit new people. And we were very surprised when we announced in our we did an internal announcement among our friends that we want people who for our news. And the next day, a lot of people showed up. They wanted to work with us, and we recruited some of them. They are new. They are eager to learn, and they are very courageous. But it would be very difficult to for every company for. When they lose all the best within 24 hours, within 1 week, and then to try to deliver the same quality, it's not possible. We our quality suffered a lot.
Sure. I mean, and so you were in Europe when the September 15th evacuation happened. At some point, I guess you decided I need to go back to Afghanistan and put my company back together. When did you arrive back in Afghanistan? And when you arrived, what did it look like to you? What did Kabul look like? compared to before? Yeah,
first of all, I wished I were in Kabul when this all happened, because I could help more my colleagues. But when after the fall of Kabul, for me it's clear that I'm going back. I left Afghanistan once in 1980s after the Russian invasion. At that time, I didn't know if I'm going to be back. And then I came back to Afghanistan. And this time, I didn't want to spend another... I don't have the time to spend another 10 years, 20 years outside Afghanistan. That's why I wanted to come back in Kabul. I knew that when I'm back in Kabul, Kabul is not the same city as it was before, before I left. And it was true. Kabul is not the same city. I give you one example which make me very sad, is that almost all my good friends are not more here. When I'm in living room in my guest house, and I go through the my contact list, and I can hardly find people who are still there. I can call and I can
no one to hang out with.
Make an appointment and hang out with. That is one of the issues which is not the same. But at the same time, there are positive aspects. For example, there's no fighting. In the city. We don't have. At the very beginning, there were some attacks, suicide attacks. But now, for the last 1.5-2 months, it is calm, and people can travel around the country. That is a positive aspect, but there are also a lot of negative aspects. For example, especially in regards to women rights. Girls' schools are closed. Women are not allowed to work in public institutions in government. 100,000s of young qualified Afghans lost their job. Our economy collapsed. People have said that it will collapse, but it has already collapsed. And the level of poverty is skyrocketing. You see a lot of beggars on the road, in the streets. People are waiting to get some food from international organizations and so on. These are negative aspects of the city now in February 2022.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we read that 5% of the workforce has lost their job since August. And
5%?
Like 5%
more. I would say more.
More.
Yeah.
Much more.
Yeah. Yeah. The Economist, they give me phony numbers.
Yeah, it is. I think 70%. Every private sector, every business, or almost all business, lost more than 70% of their business.
Yeah,
and people aren't getting paid, right? Because there's no money to pay people with. Even if people have jobs, that's an issue as well.
Yeah, people don't have access. Have limited access to their accounts. Government is not in a position to make the payments for government employees regularly. Some people haven't got their salaries for the last 5 months. Even private sector, in media, I give you an example from media over 60% of media shut down their operation. Over 80% of female staff of media lost their job. More than 340 media outlets are shut down. That is the 60%. That is awful.
Yeah. So the private media, I want to get into how you all stayed on the air, what you guys had to do, and how we rebuild the country, and also your personal story. But before that, we do have to take a break for an ad. Pay the bills, Kaplan. So we are part of the world's smartest podcast network. That is Dr. Andrea Jones Roy. She is host of the Majoring in Everything podcast. She also, if you're in New York City on March 1st, which I believe is today, if this pod's coming out, March 1st, go see her at Caveat. She has her big one person show she's doing there. Caveat in New York City. You can get tickets to that. Also on the network is Andrew Heaton, the host of the Political Orphanage podcast. I think he has four podcasts now, but yeah, the only one podcasts we allow on the network is the Political Orphanage podcast. And please support both of them. Of course, we are the world's we are Lost in America. And now, Kaplan, a word from your local sponsor. All right, we're
back. Thank you, sponsors.
Thank you so much. So Shafiq, you said that 60% of the media companies were shut down, and that's over 340. So it sounds like media was pretty big there. How did you all manage to stay on the air? Was it some type of negotiating or meetings with the Taliban government or some, you had to, I would assume you had to work it out somehow to get it done.
Okay, we at the beginning of the 3-4 months before the fall of Kabul, we worked on plans how to deal with the situation if fighting will become worse and if the Taliban will come to Afghanistan. When we worked for different scenarios, and one of the scenarios was also to that there will be a peaceful handover of power, but we were thinking that most probably a change will come around October, but it came earlier.
The president left.
And president left. President left. We got surprised. We from the very beginning we knew that we will be facing a lot of challenge in regards to our entertainment shows, music, soap operas, comedies, and so on. We expected or we hoped that we will not face a lot of problems or resistance in regards to our news coverage. And that is why we said, okay, for the first 3-4 days, we stop our entertainment shows and we go only in all our TV channels, we broadcast news. And that is how we started. And when the Taliban came to our office the first night, the second night, they came to our office and we expected something very bad. But they came and said, if we have weapons for our security, we said, yes, we have. And then they said, okay, it's our own or it is from the government. Some of them were from the government. And then they said, okay, give us the ones which belongs to the government. You can take, you can keep the ones that that belongs to you, and and we will come later to talk about this. And they offered their support in terms of security to us, but refused to accept their support. We said no, that we are an independent media outlet. We will take care about our security ourselves, and we don't need them to be inside our compound. And they left. And that was for us a signal that we can work. And our journalists were the next day or were on the streets covering the news from the city. It was a tough time. There were need for a lot of courage and to take risk. And where we are now, they do, I don't want to say, but we started slowly with our entertainment show, not to provoke, and also not to put our news at risk. Gradually we started with a bit of music, a bit of comedy, and then also some. We had to find new film, movies, new series. And that it's and we managed to bring something. It is now it's also for us. It is that we it's not easy to find appropriate or acceptable entertaining shows. We have to become more creative. And we have to take new initiatives and then see how if it works or if not. But on that new side, we are happy that to certain extent, I'm trying to choose the right for certain extent we can broadcast. We can. Brought us up out of the situation of Afghanistan.
So is it, that's amazing that there was no formal meeting with the Taliban government. It was just, they came, they looked around.
They'll schedule a meeting with your assistant.
And they said, okay, we'll come back to get the rest of the guns. And then that, and then you just went, I guess that means we can work.
Yeah. We still have some guns.
I guess we're okay.
Yeah, later we had the official meetings.
Are there official rules of things you can't say?
The problem is that even the Taliban, they don't have ready-made rules and regulations for media.
Okay.
And we have to talk to them and to find out what... In regards to entertainment, we told them that in regards to entertainment, we want to talk to them and to find the right way, how best we can entertain the people, because the people, they need entertainment. As one who experienced the Taliban back in 1996 and until 2001, for me was a big surprise that the Taliban allowed the TVs or the TV channels to operate, because that was not the case 20 years, 25, 23 years ago. And then the next positive signal was also that we were allowed to have our female staff on the screen, which was also good. But on the other side, it is very sad that we are not allowed, that we can't broadcast music, pop music, and so on.
Are the female staff?
That is the other aspect of it.
So they said yes to the females?
We have to deal with this situation.
Sure.
With the hope that more positive change will come in the future.
So are these Taliban officials, you said it's such a different from the 90s to today.
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me or you cannot?
Somehow it's stuck.
Oh. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Hi.
You were frozen earlier, but then.
Kaplan, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Or? I think the connection's... I lost you.
Oh, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you. No problem.
But I can't hear you. Now I can. Now can? I can hear you.
Oh. Now we're good. Okay, good. So I'll go. I have a question here. So you said that the the Taliban acts so much differently, at least in terms of media and everything, from the 90s to the new Taliban, Taliban 1 versus Taliban 2, if we want to call them that.
2.0.
Are these the same, literally the same people, but older? Or is this totally different group of people, the Taliban now?
Okay, I don't know, but I think that, as I mentioned before, that Taliban are also reliant on communication technology.
Yes,
they have their Twitter account, they have their Facebook account, they have they are there. In the last 20 years during the war, they used us very efficiently for their mm-hmm. propagandas, and they know that without these, they can't run the country, they can't reach the people. That is why that there is this change, because they can use us also for their own goals. I don't want to say Taliban 1, Taliban 2. Yeah. I'm just trying to speak about the realities on the ground. There are a lot of harmful things happening in the country, and the people are still afraid. What I also understand why they are afraid, because there are restrictions of movement of people. We do not have now the freedom of speech as we had in the past. But I hope very much that by passage of time, that will come. That's what we are challenged. And we have to work for it, and we have to fight for it. Otherwise, it will not come from itself. We have to talk to these people, and we have to try. We have to convince why we should be able to entertain people in a way not to damage our cultural values, our national interests, but it should be done. It is not easy.
Sure.
Because we should also understand that Taliban, they spend more than 20 years in the mountains, in the villages, and they were in war, without any education, without any proper proper life. And that's why they are coming in big cities.
They're returning to the cities
Kabul or Afghanistan of 2022 is not the same Afghanistan of 1996 when Taliban came to power. At that time, Afghanistan was a very insecure country. It was damaged. It was very poor. No communication facilities, no health services, no education services. A collapsed government. And also, there was also war. But now the Taliban are coming to the, in 2022, Taliban came to Afghanistan, where there are more than 22 million of the population have access to internet, to mobile phone.
Right, they had no internet before.
We have universities, we have hospitals, we have schools, and people want to have these services. In Taliban, as a government, they are challenged to deliver. I hope they understand that it's not easy, and this can't be done without qualified people. This can't be achieved without cooperation with the international community. And I hope that it will work and that situation will not become worse.
Well, it's a simple matter of them being realistic, I guess, that you can't, you know, take the genie out of the, like, people have had access to all these things they didn't have before, like television, and they're going to need something. You can't just go back to turning it completely off. So they have to be, you're feeling like they're being a little reasonable. Like, we have to have news. We have to have, they're amenable to comedy shows. You mentioned you brought back comedy. Like I can't imagine the Taliban like to laugh much, but they're okay with you guys. They're okay with you guys broadcasting comedy network shows. They're just a little different perhaps, or.
Let me tell you something. When I was in Germany after the fall of Kabul, I saw pictures in social medias, Taliban playing in kids' playgrounds, jumping and all these games that kids have. They were so happy. 20 years, 18 years, years young people in a kids' playground.
Wow.
Enjoying
their time. They've never seen one, right?
A lot of people, they laughed about it. But for me, these pictures showed me that they have lost their childhood.
Hmm.
They have never had the possibility to do so. I'm saying this because you say Taliban are not laughing. No, Taliban are laughing.
Oh.
They are a human being. And yes. And for us, we do not have another alternative as to be positive for a positive change and work for it. It is not easy, but nothing is easy in Afghanistan. Nothing has been easy in Afghanistan for more than 40 years. 42 years.
What about you personally? Are you from Kabul? Did you grow up in Kabul, or where did you grow up?
I spent my childhood until fourth grade in northern Kabul, in a province called Parvan, in a valley. I was today there. I visited my village after a long time.
Wow!
And I was so happy. And then we came to Kabul, and I grew up in Kabul. And I left Afghanistan when I was 17, after Russian invasion in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And I went to Germany. I studied but I was all the time in contact with Afghanistan.
So you went to university in Germany?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you left during the first, the Afghan, Russian invasion. And then when did you move back? I guess 2012, is that when you came back to Kabul to work for Moby Group?
No. I came back to Afghanistan one time, shortly in 1984. I spent some time with Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
Whoa.
Old school.
But I understand at that time that it was a wrong decision. And I went back to Germany and resumed my study. And when I made my master's degree, I got the chance to work in Afghanistan as a short-term expert. And that started that I came back and... I spend a lot of time. I worked more than 16 years for the German government-owned development agency, which is called German Agency for International Cooperation. I worked with them from Pakistan for Afghanistan. And in 2003, after the fall of Taliban, I came back to Afghanistan and I stayed here, and my family was also with me at that time.
And is your, it's an amazing story you have. And is your family now, did they come back with, so then 2003 until, like, when did you leave? Because I know when it happened in September, you were in Europe. When did you leave for Europe?
I left Kabul on, I think it was 10th of August, 9th of 8th of August 2021, just 1 week prior to the fall of Kabul. And I joined because we spend our summer vacation in Europe with family, and that's why I wanted to join my family. Two of my daughters were with me in Kabul, and we all three went and joined the rest of family.
Okay, so are they in Europe?
I came back in November.
Wow, so you were not gone too long, only 2 months. But yeah, a lot
because because there were no flight to come back.
Nobody's flying into the country at this point. It was everyone was trying to leave.
Now it's there are flights, but from 15th of August until 10th of October, there were no flights.
And what do you see? How long do you think you'll stay this time?
I'm planning to stay until our new year, which is start of spring, 21st of March, and maybe longer. Maybe, but I will leave a bit earlier
to put the company
depends
back
on,
together.
It depends on how we works will go on.
My gosh. And what do you see as I know this is a difficult question, but what might be a solution? I know we've talked, I don't know if we've talked about this on air yet, but there's $7 billion in Afghan reserves that are in the United States.
In banks here, I guess.
Banks in the United States. And Biden has decided to split those in half and give half of them back to Afghanistan and take half of them to give to the victims of the 9/11 families.
Fund. Yeah, which is very strange.
It's hard to say. I mean, those people are suing. I don't want to get the story wrong. I think those people are suing the U.S. government or something, or they're owed some money from the U.S. government. So he's taking this Afghan money.
I think they sued the Afghanistan government, right?
Did they sue the Afghanistan government? Okay. And so he's taking this money to pay them. From what I read, it's with 75% of the economy existing previously on foreign aid, how does the economy put itself back together without that aid?
Okay, first of all, Biden's made a lot of wrong decisions in regards to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And I think Biden was one of those who were against U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan back in time when he was a senator. Hmm. Afghans understand that the U.S. soldiers shouldn't stay here forever. But Afghans and all the U.S. allies expected from U.S. government that they will make a proper withdrawal and not leaving the country. I see the decision of Biden to leave the country to set a timetable on 1st of September, an affront to the life of more than 3,000 U.S. soldiers who lost their life in Afghanistan. Mm. Yeah. Because these people, they came to Afghanistan to fight against terror and also to help the people. But they left, and all the achievements from the last 20 years are lost or gone. And coming back to your question, is decision in regards to our national reserve, that is not the money which should be spent for aid money. That is a money which stabilizes our currency. Without having these money, our currency can't exist any longer. And why U.S. is deciding how this money should spend? And Afghans were not involved in a 9/11 attack. None of the Afghans were there.
Yeah,
Osama bin Laden was killed in Pakistan. I think the majority of attackers were from another country, from Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
Why Afghans should suffer for that?
Yeah.
I should not. I mean, the only thing
strange.
And it is also funny for me to learn that one of the counselors of President Biden, who counseled in Afghanistan issues, is now leading the law firms which is suing the American government to get the money for the people who lost their loved ones in.
So they are suing the U.S. government.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
But the politicians from White House is now doing, who was advising the president of United States, is now the head of these law firms. Yeah. That is, for me, is a conflict of interest because he has a lot of internal information about the situation, and it's not fair.
And it's sure.
I mean, the only thing to add, and I think it's important to note, is that the Taliban, the people of Afghanistan, of course, did nothing wrong. I think the Taliban was kind of harboring Osama bin Laden,
and right, of course,
and that's probably the connection. The big aid question is that if this happens, this comes up with Cuba, with a lot of countries historically, but if we give aid, people are worried if we give aid, or, I mean, this isn't even aid, this is Afghanistan's money. So this is a different conversation, but switching to aid quickly, if we give aid to Afghanistan, how do we know it's not just going to be taken by the Taliban and not used for the people? I think that's a big concern.
U.S. government started a peace negotiation with Taliban 3 years ago, sidelining, ignoring the Afghanistan government.
Yeah,
they accepted all the their requests, and that is why the government of Taliban is not recognized by anyone. Afghanistan doesn't have a government. Taking the money the money doesn't belong to Taliban. It didn't belong to President Ashraf Ghani. That is the money of Afghans, and Afghans were not involved in 9/11 at all.
Yes.
For your listeners, people they has forgotten. Osama bin Laden was supported in the very beginning by the U.S. government. When he came to Pakistan to help the fight against the Russian, he was supported by US
in the 1980s.
In the 1980s, yeah.
And private donors.
And that is why the people of Afghanistan are so disappointed about this decision, and about many things, but especially about the decision to take over, to freeze the money of Afghan, not to freeze, but to allocate part of 50% of the money for aid, and 50% should be kept until the courts of America decides about this money.
$3.5 billion to go to the victim. It just seems like it's such a strange, like, it could 10% of the money maybe, but half the money. We're talking about $3.5 billion. So
yeah, I don't know how. I mean, like, I don't know enough basically to know how this is getting decided.
I can see why they're getting upset about it.
If it's Afghanistan people's money, what would be, Shafiq, what would be the best way to get this money directly to the people? As you said, it's the people's money. It's not the Taliban's. It's not the former governments. It's the people's money. Because how is money coming in and out of the country right now? And I realize we're going a little long here. So if
this money should be kept until the Taliban will come with a proper government. At the moment, Taliban announced a transitional government. They do not have a government in place, and they are in discussion. Their negotiations are going on with the international community as well, with also some Afghans, how the future government should look like. And as soon a government is in place which get recognized from the international community, then this money should be given to the Central Bank of Afghanistan. in because the Central Bank of Afghanistan is a independent institution like the Treasury of US and like the Central Bank of Europe. They should then decide how this money should be used. This money is a guarantee for the future generation of Afghanistan. It is not even for us.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah. Using it as a carrot, holding on to it until what would a proper government look like in Afghanistan? Would this be free election? Are you thinking free elections and parties and all that kind of thing? Or what do you have in mind?
Okay, I would love to see the free election in Afghanistan, and that power should come from the people. The every single vote should be counted. That is what I wish for Afghanistan, and I would, if I could contribute to such a goal, I would do it. But I know that it is very difficult. It would be very difficult. At the moment, I think it would be the best if a government will come to power, which will represent all the societies, all the ethnies of Afghanistan, and a very highly qualified cabinet should be in place. And maybe then there are also other institutions who should then oversight the cabinet and so on should be in place. But it is a long way to go until we have a elected government. It will not come from in the near future, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And how about the, I know we hear a lot about how the people are living right now, and it's a lot of poverty and it's desperation and it's difficult times. How are the, how are the Taliban kind of living? Is it also tough, difficult times for them as well? Or do they have a reserve of money that they're living off of and more, I guess, like, are they living a better life than the average person?
Okay, I'm not very much engaged in touch with the Taliban, but I'm hearing from colleagues, from friends, that Taliban, they have been also fighting with economic problems. They haven't paid for months. I met one of their commanders a few days ago, who said that he was happy to distribute 300 Afghani, which is $2.50, to his soldiers to buy a shampoo or to buy a soap. In the last months. That means that they have also problem. But Taliban are used to these tough conditions.
They're used to the mountains.
They spend time in mountains. They are not used to luxury life. But a lot of Afghans, not only Taliban, the overwhelming majority of Afghans are poor. They were poor also before the fall of Kabul. The poverty rate of Afghanistan was very high even before the fall of Kabul, but it became worse now.
And so, yeah, so this idea of one, like, just general political theory, let's take Cuba, for example, as well. If we cut them off with sanctions, eventually their government will fall because they don't have any money left. And we've been trying that with Cuba since 1959, and it hasn't happened. Their government hasn't fallen yet. So I'm just curious as to how that, if you can relate that at all to Afghanistan, but it sounds like the Taliban is used to living in poverty. So they're not going to fall apart anytime soon.
For money. Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to answer that. I know I don't want to put you in a tough spot.
I mean,
for that.
No, it is. That's the question is not fall or continuance one. The question is, how best can we achieve a government in Afghanistan, which is acceptable to the people of Afghanistan?
Yes.
While a government where women rights is respected, a woman can work. Mm-hmm. How they are dressed is not a question. The question is how they have to go to school, because the school the Islam hasn't forbidden women to study, to get educated.
Yeah,
they did not forbidden the women to work outside their houses. That are the question that we should achieve at the moment, and not big picture of politics, because that would take a very long time.
Need to get the basics.
We negotiated with the Taliban, so for us to say, well, we don't want them in charge after we just basically left them in charge.
There's we, the U.S. government, yeah, and then there's
not
just
me, you, and you. I don't mean you and I.
Yeah, we did not.
I thought you two.
We worked out a deal for a podcast on a network there. Yeah. We're the official podcast of the Taliban.
You have a comedy show, and I think talking to me was not funny at all, and I'm sorry for that, because
no,
I have to. I'm talking about serious stuff, and we are also asking issues which is not funny for your listeners.
It doesn't have to be funny. But our show,
our listeners need to learn.
The way they get their funny is on Live from the Bunker. That costs $5
pay
a month
us for laughs
to get funny. This is where they get information. This is where we learn about the world, and they jump in with us. And everyone loves it because we get stories from people like you, which are actually living the story, as opposed to, you know, whatever's on TV.
You should put us on the Tolo TV, perhaps. We have no women on the show, so the Taliban
will
be okay.
We will move to Afghanistan to have our own television show.
Yeah.
We've been trying for years to have a TV show.
Actually from a bunker, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the biggest issue is how, so because they don't have money, right, in the Afghan, like the banks are very low on money, right? They can't even give money to the NGOs because there's so little money in the banks, is what we were reading. So how would people even go about helping? Like, can we, because like, do we just, is there somewhere we can donate, or what can we do to actually help the situation, or that would actually get money through, you know?
Okay, the aid money is now distributed, or food stuff are distributed by UN organizations. And there are other non-governmental organizations who are helping the people. But there are a lot of also private initiative from Afghan overseas who are supporting their friends and families inside Afghanistan. The problem is how to get the money inside Afghanistan and how to get the money outside Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's what.
Because the banking is not functioning. But people are smart. They try to find ways. It is not easy for small things. They will find possibilities. But as long as these sanctions on banking is in place, it is very difficult to solve the problem. I give you one example. Now there are some sanctions are lifted so that money can be transferred to a bank in Afghanistan, which can be only used by humanitarian help. But at the same time, there's money in Afghanistan because people are buying stuff and so on, and we have import. These people who have money inside Afghanistan, they can't get the money outside Afghanistan. For example, a trader of beans who sold his beans to WFP for maybe $100,000. He needs now to import beans for $100,000 from outside, but he can't pay his client this money. And it is, how do you say it?
It's like the chicken or the egg, we say. Like, what comes from? You need the money to pay to get the stuff to make the money, but you don't have the money.
There's literally no currency, yeah.
What about with you? How did you prepare for this 5-6 month trip, basically, to Afghanistan? Do you just have cash? Did you just bring?
You're just rolling in.
Like, because you can't use credit cards and
Bitcoin.
You can't, right?
Bitcoins.
Bitcoin, yeah, your crypto.
That's what we need to create a new crypto there.
No, I had a bit money in my account in Afghanistan. and I can withdraw a bit of money weekly, which I can use. Right? And then I bring also cash with me.
Not very much cash, just, if anyone's out there
listening.
Yeah,
let's not advertise how much cash he's walking around with.
A little bit.
No, the trade in Afghanistan is now in cash. People don't trust the banks. Nobody will give his money to the bank.
Yeah. Is it foreign cash, or like, do you just use like dollars or euros or something? Or you use local?
No, but foreign cash is exchanged in the Afghani, and then Afghani will be used for the daily life. Shopping.
And you said you feel safe walking around daily life, everything. You don't feel in danger at all.
So far, good. Yeah.
So far, so good.
It's the honeymoon period of the new government.
Well, I hope it is not. I hope it will be a long honeymoon.
We hope so too. Yeah, my gosh. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Kaplan. If you have anything else, go ahead.
No, I think it's good.
This is amazing. We really appreciate your time and appreciate having you do this. And if people, can we tell people to follow you on Twitter? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Go to, I don't know how public you want to be, but go to.
I'm not very active in Twitter, but it's okay.
Well, it's a way to get good information on what's going on in Afghanistan. Yes. Kaplan and I follow you, and you post a lot of just
if people want to get information about Afghanistan, they can follow me because I retweet all our news.
Yes. So go to Shafiq Ghahari, at Shafiq Ghahari, SHAFICGAWHARI on Twitter. And you can check him out there. Thank you.
Okay.
Stay safe.
If I get 1,000 more followers, I will send you some dry fruit from Afghanistan.
Dry fruit. I'll take it.
Raisins are. I'm going to ask, is the national dish really lamb? Because they told me in my local Queens Afghani restaurant that it was this lamb dish with carrots and raisins. Is that real?
Palau.
Oh, yeah. That's what it's called, I think.
Yeah, the name
amazing.
I'm going to donate money to their bill. I trust them now.
There you go. All right. That is it. Shafiq, thank you so much for doing the show.
Welcome. Thanks for
Kaplan, what should we do?
Yes, thank you. This was amazing. And I guess it's time for us to get lost.
Get lost.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.